Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a difficult year for the Hancock County Agricultural Society came to a head last week with a management shakeup less than a month before the beginning of the fair. But the show will go on. Also this morning, families today have more education options than ever before. This year, 3 out of 4 parents say they have at least investigated their options, if not enrolled their child in a different school than they attended last year. We take a closer look at the boom in school choice. And we have some easy recipes to help you put a home-cooked meal on the table during those frazzled school nights from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, August 14th, 2026. So Wallet Hub is out with another of their lists, and I love Wallet Hub's lists because they really do a deep dive into the data. This one is a pretty ambitious list. They are ranking the best states to live in, the top states to live in. And all 50 states are being ranked, obviously. 51 different metrics used to rank the states. 51 different metrics, including healthcare and location, income, home ownership rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 51 in all. And the number one state to live in, according to Wallet Hub, Idaho, for its low real estate tax rate and highest median income growth in the country. Actually, New Jersey takes the second spot. You can agree or disagree, but they say New Jersey, the second best state to live in for its location, its proximity to major economic hubs, and highly rated healthcare. Wisconsin is number 3 for its affordable housing. Massachusetts and New Hampshire round out the top 5. At the bottom of the list are, in order, Mississippi at 48, Louisiana 49, and New Mexico at the bottom of the list at number 50. And I've been to New Mexico. It's a lovely state. It's a little dry, but it's a lovely state. But not the best to live in by far. Ohio ranked 28th out of 50. So not great, but one spot ahead of Michigan at number 29. So that's really all that matters, isn't it? let's see. If you haven't had enough summertime fun, head to Cedar Point or Kings Island. Six Flags, which, of course, parent company now of Cedar Point and Kings Island. Six Flags is offering discounted season passes for both parks right now. It would include the remainder of this year and next year. The promotion runs through September 7th. You can get a gold pass for $115. Unlimited visits for the rest of this season and for next season, discounted drink plans, and haunted attraction passes are available as well for like the Hollow weekends. I don't think the gold pass includes Hollow weekends. You have to get the next step up in the pass, and they have different levels of season passes. And for at Kings Island, they have not only a Halloween haunt. I don't know what they call it. It's not Hollow weekends. I don't know what they call it at Kings Island, but they also have a Winterfest down at Kings Island that is worth checking out too. So anyway, that runs through September 7th. If you want to get a season pass to Cedar Point or Kings Island or both. Again, you have different tiers of season passes. You can get one that you can go to both parks for the price of one. If you are not looking to spend that kind of money, Woodward Dream Cruise is coming up this weekend. The Woodward Dream Cruise, if you're a classic car enthusiast, this is like Nirvana. I mean, this is a bucket list event. I have said for years, I want to go up to the Woodward Dream Cruise in Detroit. It's actually 9 suburbs in Detroit that are participating. It is billed as the world's largest one-day automotive event, and where else would it be but the Motor City? The cruise runs 16 miles from Ferndale to Pontiac, and about 1 million people and some 30 to 40,000 vehicles are expected to participate. It all happens Saturday between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. So all day tomorrow, officials say the best way to watch the hot rods is from the roadside by sitting in some green space or taking a stroll. There are a lot of different events happening in the various suburbs and the various neighborhoods. There are sub car shows, like mini car shows in many of the locations as the cruise goes by on Woodward Avenue. And they also have a number of entertainment stages, live music, and, you know, food and all of that. It is just incredible. 16 miles of classic cars along Woodward, the Dream Cruise happening tomorrow. So worth checking out if you are a classic car enthusiast. I really should check the forecast for tomorrow to see what I don't know. You know, if they get rain in Detroit, I know for our area, it's about a 50-50 chance of some rain tomorrow. As 30 to 40,000 cars, I can't imagine they'll all stay away, even if it rains. But that would certainly put a damper on things. But that is scheduled for tomorrow. A couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You've been following the story of the lawsuit involving Beaver's Mini Mart in suburban Dayton. That is not the only legal battle that the Buc-ee's chain is involved in, and one that has now been resolved, one of their many legal actions that has now been resolved, this one certainly seems to be much more well-founded. A business in Central Florida, unaffiliated with Buc-ee's, has settled with the company after being sued for selling knockoff beaver merch. They were actually, according to Buc-ee's, Prometheus Esoterica. What a company name, right? Prometheus Esoterica of Central Florida was using Buc-ee's branding on their merchandise that they were saying is not official Buc-ee's licensed merchandise. They were just lifting the logo and putting it on their stuff and selling it. Can't do that. The shop is now banned from using Buc-ee's trademarks or helping other businesses use Buc-ee's trademarks illegally. Under the settlement, Prometheus Esoterica must destroy, dispose of all of the items that they had offered for sale bearing the Buc-ee's logo and remove all of the related ads from their online presence, their website, their social media, all of that. So that would seem to be, you know, I've always said, it is certainly within a company's rights and responsibilities to defend their intellectual property, their trademarks, their logos, and so on. And nobody faults Buc-ee's or any other company for doing that. But when Buc-ee's goes after this little mini mart in suburban Dayton, just because they have a beaver that looks nothing like Buc-ee's beaver, other than it's brown and the name of the shop is in red, that seems a little frivolous, more than a little frivolous. Certainly you can't fault Buc-ee's for trying to protect their business, but you know, this is a perfect example of a case that is justified, but the one that's going on in Dayton, you know, anyway, you know the story. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Now, this is what you might call cancel culture. Amid rising costs for essentials like groceries and gas, Americans are canceling costly subscriptions. We have become, in recent years, a subscription society. It seems like we don't buy anything anymore. We just pay for subscriptions for, you know, everything. But we're talking about things like streaming services, exercise, you know, gym memberships, that kind of thing. These kinds of subscriptions, recurring charges. And Deloitte says that 52% of consumers ended at least one subscription in the past 6 months. Younger demographics, particularly millennials and Gen Zers, are leading this trend. Unused services are the main reason for the cancellations. But really, it boils down to money, as everything else costs more. We can't afford to keep paying for something that we're just not using or not using enough of. On average, consumers spend $111 monthly on various subscriptions. That is a 23% increase from last year on unused subscriptions. The report from Deloitte says typical users waste an average of $21 a month or $252 annually on subscriptions they don't use. So $21 a month, we're just throwing down the drain. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it does add up, especially when everything else starts to cost more. Let's see. And by the way, that is it's $252 a year. Last year was $204. So that's going up. The top category for cutting back was in fitness and gym memberships, fitness subscriptions, like for your Fitbit or, you know, your gym membership, whatever it might happen to be. So fitness related subscriptions were top of the list to get the axe, followed by streaming and entertainment. And that could be if you don't watch Netflix or you don't watch Hulu or whatever it is, you cancel a streaming service or a music service like Spotify or Tidal or, you know, one of those music streaming services. Sometimes people subscribe to more than one, so they're trimming those back. In these categories specifically, research shows that flexible brands actually retain more customers, especially those that offer a pause feature. So you don't have to cancel, you just pause your subscription. End result is the same, but the subscription remains active, so you can reactivate it with just a click instead of having to go through the whole rigmarole of signing up again. And in some cases, as many as 75% of the users who pause their subscriptions eventually return as paying customers, which is a lot better than if you know, the services that don't offer that and you just have to cancel, and much less likely to come back later. Other prime targets for cutting back include unused credit cards that carry an annual fee. I have to admit, I have one of those in my wallet. I've got a card that I hardly ever use. It has an annual fee. I don't know why I keep it. I just, you know, I guess I'm too lazy to cancel. But that's a top target. And duplicate subscriptions. If you're looking to cut back on the amount of money you're spending every month on subscription services, look and see if you have any duplicates. Experts say that is much more common than you might think. If you signed up for, say, Netflix once many years ago, forgot about it, signed up again, you're paying for it twice without even realizing it. That is a really easy way to cut your subscription cost down to size. Anyway, interesting stuff there about that trend of cutting the cord on cutting the cord and then some. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories there to get your Friday morning started.
Honoring the men and women of our military and first responder communities. American Warrior Radio, Sunday morning at 6 on WFIN.
Well, it is no secret that it has been a challenging year for the Hancock County Agricultural Society. Things kind of came to a head last week with the resignation of Fair and Events Manager Haley Reese, less than a month away from the start of this year's county fair. But rest assured, the show will go on. We are joined now by Ag Society President Levi Beagle. Levi, was all of this, you know, this latest development, was this a surprise to you? Did you see it coming? Kind of lay out how all of this happened.
Haley just presented us with her resignation, and the board moved to accept it. We wish her nothing but the best, and she has done a lot of great things for us here at the fair, and certainly got us a lot of opportunities that we wouldn't have had without her. So, like I said, it was a little bit of sticker shock, but like we wish her nothing the best moving forward, and we're ready to have some people step up and fill that role and get things going for the 2026 Hancock County Fair.
So just to be clear, this was a voluntary decision. It wasn't as if she had been asked to resign, anything like that.
Correct.
Now, again, I don't want to rehash all of the difficulties of the past year or so. Those have certainly been well documented. To what extent did those difficulties lead to this development? And are you kind of looking at this as an opportunity to reset and move forward with a fresh start?
Yes, it's no secret. Last year has been a bit of a challenge for us. But like I said, we had good leadership. Yeah, I guess you could say this is kind of a reset button moving forward with the community, and hope to start anew and rebuild some relationships, I guess, that got a little shuffled in the mix. So, like I said, we're looking to move forward and wish Haley nothing but the best.
Yeah.
With her next adventure.
And certainly not to imply that, you know, she's a scapegoat for, you know, all of that. There are a lot of things going on here.
No.
With that being said, let me ask this way. How confident are you as the president of the Ag Society in the financial position, the financial status of the Agricultural Society right now? Have the issues we mentioned, they've been well documented. Have these been resolved in your mind, or is there still work to be done?
I think they've been resolved. Like, it's been well documented, as you said, but we're in very good financial standings heading into the fair. I feel confident we'll have enough capital here to move forward with the fair and get everything. The fair itself is pretty much booked in, locked in at this point, so we're ready to just put on the best fair we can for the community and the kids of this county that they deserve.
Obviously, it is less than ideal to have such a significant change in leadership this close to the fair. But as the board has stated publicly, things are in good hands with Shelley Metzger taking over, at least on an interim basis.
Correct. And we have Shelley has stepped up, and even Britta in the office to help fill that role. And we've had some board members and volunteers that have offered to help fill in where they need be. There will be some challenges, we have no doubt of that, but we will take day by day and fill with what we need to get done to present this fair for the community.
It kind of sounds like it's an all hands on deck kind of mode, and I guess in a way that can be seen as a really positive thing for the community, to see so many people sort of stepping up to, you know, fill that void and make it all happen without missing a beat.
Correct. Yes, we have a very good board in my mind at the moment. They're a really cohesive unit. We're getting a lot of work done together. We've got some work nights scheduled here before the fair. I know we're in the final 2 weeks almost. So,
right.
But yeah, we got a lot of projects to get knocked down. The fairgrounds itself is looking great. Our grounds crew, as always, has got the place looking sharp. We just got a few things to button up, and we'll be ready to roll for the fair.
So where does this leave plans that have been in the works for ongoing projects and future fairgrounds improvements?
Well, good point, Chris. Once again, our small animal numbers are up 104 head, but that's between rabbits and poultry. So our next priority will be that small animal building for those folks, so they have a proper place to display their hard work as well, like all the other all the other projects on the ground. So that's kind of our next project for the folks of the small animal department.
Speaking of future fairgrounds improvements and things of that nature, obviously there are new things every year at the Hancock County Fair, as we know. So talk a little bit about some of what is new for this year's fair that you're most excited about.
Well, this year, Chris, we've partnered with McKinnis Amusements, so we'll have a new ride company this year.
Okay.
So we're hoping that brings a new flavor to the fair down at the Midway and that sort of thing. So we'll bring back some of our fan favorites like the cane game and the pony rides and all that stuff. But our ride company will be new this year, so that's something we're looking forward to. Thursday night, we have a free concert. Grit and Glass will be playing in the North Arena. Then on Saturday night, thanks to our sponsor, Millstream Credit Union, we'll be having Jared Neiman at the South Grandstands at 7 p.m. That we're going to charge for that this year. It'll be $10 for general admission and $20 for the pits. We'll have a beer garden and food trucks back there as well, again, for those folks. And also our demo derby will be a new day and time this year. We'll have a new demo derby company as well for putting that on for us. That'll be Friday at 7 p.m. in the South Grandstand.
So a lot of terrific entertainment options. That's something that I know a lot of folks had asked for. And, you know, that's, I guess, the reason why you really took a second look at beefing up those entertainment options, particularly with that Jared Neiman concert.
Exactly. We wanted to get a little bigger name in for those folks to enjoy. And Millstream Credit Union has been great to work with. They've been behind us 100%. And we'll also have our staple events, like Wednesday will be our calf scramble and harness racing. Saturday is our fan favorite horse pulls in the North Grandstand. So a lot of the same stuff, a lot of new and different stuff for you folks to enjoy this year.
And what is the timeline for having a new permanent manager in place? Has that process begun, or is the plan to address that after the fair?
We have no intentions of rushing into this by any means. We're going to wait. So after the fair, our focus right now is strictly the fair, getting that done and presenting it for the community. Then possibly even after reorg, we won't even tackle filling that manager spot. So we're going to take our time, think of some options, talk to people at the fair, and see what's out there for us.
So to be clear, it sounds as though there may be a larger reorganization or a restructuring in the future, perhaps?
Well, every year when we have our annual election, we end our year and we have a called a reorg where we elect new officers and all that kind of stuff. So it's just standard year to year stuff. But our executive committee can change, president, vice president, all that stuff. But it's just a normal year to year thing. So we'll wait and get that new board on and let them have a say in this decision.
Again, Hancock County Agricultural Society President Levi Beagle with us this morning. The Hancock County Fair, as you mentioned, just a couple of weeks and change away, and we certainly look forward to it. Levi, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Well, of course, it is back to school season, and families have more education options than ever before. This year, 3 out of 4 parents say they have at least investigated their options, if not enrolled their child in a different school than the one they attended last year. Shelby Doyle is with us this morning. She is Senior Vice President of Policy and National Partnerships at the National School Choice Awareness Foundation. That figure, Shelby, 75% of parents exploring their school choice options is the highest in 5 years, I'm told. What do you believe is driving that?
I think two things are driving parent interest in exploring school choice options. Number one, the awareness that there are more options than there used to be. So it is enticing and interesting to see what all is out there now. We're hearing in the news so much about school choice growing, and people want to know, what does that mean for me? The second reason is that we have a different generation of parents making different types of choices for their kids' schooling. Millennials are now parents of school-aged kids, and they are used to making more customized choices about everything they do in their life, from how they get to from point A to point B to where and how they shop for groceries. And they're applying that mentality to how they choose schools for their kids.
We mentioned more educational options than ever before for parents. What are the biggest school choice changes this year and in recent years?
In recent years, there's been really two themes of expansions. One has been pushing for more flexible private school choice programs in more states. These are often referred to as education savings accounts, and they're state funding mechanisms that allow parents to choose not just tuition at a private school, but other things that help contribute to kids' success, from tutoring to transportation, that all become part of the solution to that school problem. There's also a theme of expanding open enrollment access, which describes parents' options in the public school system outside of the school that they're assigned to. In a state like Ohio that already has a lot of these policies on the books, there's been moves to expand or improve them, make them more universal, to make information about them more accessible for families who actually want to use them. And there's still a little bit of work to be done.
You mentioned Ohio has historically been a state that offers a great deal of options for students and flexibility for parents to exercise those options. But you say more needs to be done, such as what?
So in the last couple of years, Ohio has a huge range of private school choice programs, and Ohio has expanded the eligibility for those so that more families can benefit from them. There's also open enrollment that I just mentioned, this flexibility in the public school system. Ohio has good but not perfect policies there. So there are some states that make it easier for parents to know, one, what options they have in what different public schools, and two, make the process of applying them easier. Ohio gives districts flexibility in how much they want to participate in open enrollment, and that can make it hard for families to know what their options are and where to get started in the process.
But they are given that flexibility because few, if any, schools really have the resources to accept an unlimited number of students via open enrollment. Surely you are not suggesting that districts should not have that flexibility to decide for themselves the extent to which they are willing and able to participate.
Of course. Absolutely. And no one's arguing for, you know, completely no holds barred, yeah, no limitations, open enrollment. But I think it can, we hear from parents all the time who think, hey, I want to use open enrollment, but I actually don't know which schools have space or which schools even participate in this. And I don't know who to ask if I want to pursue that information.
Yeah, fair enough. I would think, I mean, obviously we're talking about this because it's back to school season, this very top of mind for everybody, but I would imagine that it's a little late in the game to be thinking about this for the coming school year, right?
It's a challenging time to be thinking about it. There definitely are ways to make a mid-year school change, and people do it all the time, but the traditional cycle of timing here is that folks think about the upcoming school year in that sort of January to March or April time frame.
That's right.
When a lot of applications come in and decisions get made.
It's not ideal to move a student midway through the school year. I think everyone would agree with that. So how do parents identify the best educational option for their child? As we were saying, you know, Ohio has a lot of them. There are more changes coming every year, it seems. How do I know what is going to be best for my child?
When you have so many options, which is a great thing, you then have to figure out how to make that decision unique for you as a family. So we encourage people to sit down and get really honest about their goal in choosing a school for their kids, because it actually varies a great deal what parents are hoping to achieve when they choose a school. It's not that everyone wants to get into the best academic school closest to their house. It's a lot more complicated than that. And so having, you know, your two or three non-negotiables, this has to be there, it's not worth going to, that are unique to your family, clarifies all the options that you're going to explore along the way. And they're going to look different than the people in your life. So we encourage you to cast a wide net. There may be a great school out there that you would love that no one you know has ever been to before or started in the last couple of years. So you want to start broad and then narrow it down based on what you know you need for your child.
To what extent should the kids themselves, the students themselves, be involved in those conversations?
I love that question because I think they should be as involved as they can, especially as they get older. They're making all sorts of decisions about all sorts of things in their life, and they have access to tons of information directly. Mm-hmm. If you think they're not Googling the school you told them you're thinking about for next year, you're wrong, right? They're also an active part of this information process and the decision-making process. So the more that's a two-way conversation, the better. Anytime you're trying to get anyone to do something in life, right, buy-in is important. So the more you can make it feel like a joint choice, especially for an older child, the more success you're going to have in that transition.
You're definitely, you touched on something there that every parent knows. It's a lot easier to get kids to sign on when they feel that they have some say in the matter. Shelby Doyle, again, is Senior Vice President of Policy and National Partnerships of the National School Choice Awareness Foundation. You have resources that can help parents navigate all of these options on your website, right?
We do, yeah. And our nonprofit's website, it's myschoolchoice.com. We break down all the different options that exist, how to go about choosing them. You can search for schools there and get tips like the ones I'm talking about, including a lot of back-to-school resources at myschoolchoice.com.
Shelby Doyle, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups. Breaking news. and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
Police in Kansas City, Missouri got a bit of a surprise when they recovered a stolen car and found two baby goats inside. That's just not what you expect. According to the report, officers spotted a vehicle which had been reported stolen, pulled it over, and arrested the suspect on the scene. During the process of placing the suspected thief into custody, an officer kept hearing a noise he described as a goat-sounding ringtone. Turned out it wasn't a ringtone. Upon being questioned about the noise, the suspect revealed that he had two goats in the car. A local animal rescue organization was called in to take custody of the goats, which were determined to be babies that had not yet been weaned from bottle feeding, even. There is a happy ending to the story. The goats were placed with a foster family who are now in the process of adopting them. Aw, isn't that sweet? No word on why the car thief actually had a pair of goats in the car with him. From the international file of the broken news, a British man has been sentenced to more than 4 years in prison for staging a fake brake failure on the highway to avoid his car payments. 33-year-old Nathan Owen called emergency services claiming his Jaguar electric vehicle would not stop. Police used their vehicles to halt him during a chase reaching 125 miles an hour, with Mr. Owen colliding into police cars more than 30 times. You know, they were thinking, hey, this guy's out of control. He has no brakes. Well, what he didn't know, Mr. Owen, what he didn't know was that EVs save their performance data like an airplane's black box. And the vehicle data revealed that the car had actually been stationary 30 seconds before the call was made, and that Mr. Owen never even attempted to apply the brakes during the entire ordeal. And the evidence was right there. Investigators later found out that Mr. Owen was deeply in debt and had contacted his car finance company minutes earlier about not being able to pay back the loan. Mr. Owen's own defense attorney called the scheme, quote, frighteningly stupid, unquote. Oh, and by the way, to add insult to injury, he also has to pay back the $1,100 he made by selling his story to the tabloids. So, not only is he on the hook for his loan payment, insurance fraud, falsely reporting an incident to the police, he's got to pay back his windfall from selling his story. That's a bad day right there. It just didn't work out well. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a 69-year-old Wisconsin man found a novel way to avoid the lengthy drive to get to his local Cabela's store. Washington County Sheriff's deputies responded last Saturday night to an unusual parking complaint at the store in Richfield, Wisconsin. A helicopter had touched down in the lot. The pilot from nearby Rosendale flew roughly 50 miles to the store, a trip that would have taken nearly an hour by car. And he said, well, that was just simply too long. He didn't have the time to drive, so he took his helicopter. As it turns out, authorities issued no citations. There was nothing, you know, that they could cite him for, because the pilot was properly licensed. He landed safely and met all FAA requirements. Nothing to see here. The sheriff's office concluded it was just a unique way to make a shopping trip and avoid all of the roundabouts. So there you go. That's all you need to do. If you hate the roundabouts, just get a helicopter pilot's license. You'll be fine. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Get ready for another year of Ohio State football with the Kickoff Show on WFIN. It's an in-depth preview of the upcoming season along with players and coaches' interviews.
The Kickoff Show presented by Citizens National Bank, Macomb VFW, Taylor Insurance, Superior Plus Realtors, and Buffalo Trading Company.
The Kickoff Show, Monday, August 24th at 6 p.m. on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. New survey of 2,000 parents has revealed the extreme and sometimes unhealthy measures that some families will take, some parents will take in order to afford to send their kids back to school in style. 35% of parents in the survey said that they will not dine out in order to save money they can put toward their kids' school supplies. And that doesn't seem all that unreasonable. But after that, things get a little bizarre. 23% in the survey admit to putting off contributing to their 401k or their retirement savings. One in four will skip savings to pay for back to school. 15% will take out loans for back-to-school costs, and another 15% admit to not paying their rent or mortgage in order to have money to send their kids back to school. 12% have pawned belongings, pawned something that they know that they own in order to afford back-to-school stuff, and 8% admit to gambling to try and earn a windfall to afford back-to-school. That's pretty extreme right there. Nearly 70% call back to school their most financially stressful annual event, surpassing even holiday shopping. And this is the thing. It's like the holidays. It's not like you don't know this is coming. I mean, if money is this tight that you have to resort to not paying your mortgage or gambling to try and make some quick money, if things are that tight, you know, you should be setting aside a little bit all year long to afford it. It's not like this is a surprise. You know it's coming up. But the survey also finds that on average, parents spend $689 per child on school supplies. And we apparently have a pretty broad definition of what constitutes school supplies because they include things like designer clothes and accessories and maybe computers that are actually fancier than what our kids actually need. 61% of respondents have bought something for their kid, not because they absolutely needed it, but to avoid their child being judged or feeling left out. It's a social pressure that drives this kind of overspending, and 42% confessed that they regret those pressure-driven purchases later. 74% of parents in the survey admitted that they feel guilty if they are not able to buy their child everything that they want. And again, at some point, and if you're skipping your mortgage, you got to put your foot down and say, you know, we can't afford this. You know, it's, you know, just one of life's little lessons. But 74% of parents admit they feel guilty if they're not able to buy their kids everything they want for back to school. 69% said that they would personally feel like a failure as a parent if they are not able to buy their kid everything they want or need for school. And that's maybe even a deeper rooted problem. Nearly half, 45% in the survey admit that they have gone into debt in some way, shape, or form for back-to-school shopping. 45% of us. I know it's expensive to send kids back to school these days. We've been talking about this for a month now since our Stuff the Bus campaign. We're talking about how expensive it is. I get it. But sometimes, at least based on the data of this survey, it appears maybe we make it worse on ourselves than it needs to be. So just a quick note, and I mentioned this yesterday, no Kyra's Kitchen next week because we've got something special planned for the first Friday of high school football. We will be on location at Donnell Stadium for the big kickoff of school football season.
That's awesome.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But my wife, Kyra, will not be in tow.
No.
So no recipes next Friday, but it is going to be a whole lot of fun. So we hope you will join us as we get another high school football season underway.
Can't believe. Wow.
I know.
Summer's gone quick.
And that kind of leads us to what we're talking about today. Kind of a bit of a theme for the recipes this morning, because this is the time of year when it can get hard to put a home-cooked meal on the table.
Yeah.
Things get frazzled. Things get crazy with all of the school schedules and after-school schedules and all of that. You've got kids going in about 100 different directions all at once. So you may think, gee, we can't do a home-cooked meal.
Yeah.
But it is possible. And these are all, I mean, you could do this whole thing.
Yeah.
In like an hour.
Yeah, really
so,
quick.
Yeah, it is possible. And we start with an Italian sausage ravioli bake, which is really, really
good. This was really good.
Very good.
So 1 pound bulk Italian sausage, 1 24-ounce jar of marinara sauce, 1 1/4 cups of beef broth, 1/4 cup of zesty Italian style salad dressing, 1 tablespoon of white sugar, 1 9-ounce package of cheese ravioli, 1 cup of shredded mozzarella cheese, and 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh basil. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees, grease a 9-by-inch dish and set aside. Cook Italian sausage in a skillet over medium-high heat until browned and crumbly, about 5 to 10 minutes. Drain off the grease. Add the spaghetti sauce, diced tomatoes, beef broth, Italian dressing, and sugar. Mix until well combined. Remove from the heat and add uncooked ravioli. Stir to combine. Pour in your prepared dish. Bake in the preheated oven until ravioli is tender, 45 to 55 minutes. Top with mozzarella cheese. Let it sit. What I did was I topped it with the mozzarella cheese and sprinkled it with the basil and put it back in just for a few minutes.
Okay.
Just to let that cheese melt.
All right.
It'll get done faster.
Yep.
So and then I used marinara sauce and I didn't add any other tomatoes. So I just had the marinara sauce.
Okay. So that'd
if
make
you have
it
a person
easier.
that doesn't like chunks of tomatoes.
That's me.
Surprise, surprise.
I do not I'm not a tomato guy. I just
So he does tomato sauce, he does ketchup, but don't give him a chunk of tomato. Yeah.
So whole tomatoes or tomato chunks. Yes. No, thank you.
No, thank you. So
consistency.
There are options, you know, to make it your way.
Yeah. So to go along with the Italian sausage ravioli bake, quick recipe.
Yes.
Very quick for last minute mushrooms.
Yes. So all this is 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 1/2 cups of fresh button mushrooms sliced, and you may already buy them sliced. That's what I usually do. And 1/2 teaspoon of seasoned salt in a skillet over medium heat. Melt the butter, add the mushrooms, sprinkle with the sea salt or with the seasoned salt. Cook, stirring occasionally and until mushrooms are softened and become dark in color, about 10 minutes or so, and enjoy.
Simple as that. Whenever you need a side dish at the last minute, you can do the last minute mushrooms.
Yeah,
I'm thinking if you really like mushrooms, you can put that in with the Italian sausage ravioli bake.
Yeah.
Kind of mix all of that together.
Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah. Or just have it on the side for the people who want it and for
there
the people
go.
Who don't.
Good stuff.
It's right there. Yes.
For dessert, you got a treat here. Dark chocolate chip cookie bars.
Yes.
Dark chocolate chip cookie bars.
I love cookie bars. They're just one of my favorite things to do. So 1 cup of butter melted, 1 cup of dark brown sugar, 1/2 cup of white sugar, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 2 eggs, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of baking powder, and 2 cups of dark chocolate chips. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Grease a 9x13-inch baking dish. Mix butter, brown sugar, white sugar, and cinnamon together in a bowl. Beat eggs and vanilla extract until smooth and creamy. Stir flour, baking soda, salt, and baking powder into the creamed butter mixture until batter is well mixed. Fold chocolate chips into the batter. Spread into the prepared baking dish. Bake in preheated oven until a toothpick insert comes out clean, about 40 minutes or so, depending on your oven. Mm-hmm. Cool before cutting and enjoy.
All right. There you go.
So really good and really yummy.
And you will not have leftovers of any of this.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
This is going to go.
Yeah.
This is going to go in a hurry. The Italian sausage ravioli bake, the last minute mushrooms, and the dark chocolate chip cookie bar recipes are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
Right up there now, and as a matter of fact, and you can find that at our webpage. You can go to goodmornings.net, and we've got a link to the Facebook page. It's at Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN, on Facebook, so follow that for all of the recipes every week. As we mentioned, no recipes next week, but especially now that we are into the fall and we're in the back to school season and so on, if you have a favorite quick recipe, especially for your family, that you know you can get something on the table real quick on those crazy evenings, share that with us. You can put it on the Facebook page. You can message us. You can email the recipes, goodmornings@wfin.com. But the easiest way is through the Facebook page, so feel free to share that. Or if you're looking for something,
scroll
make that
through
request.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
There are a lot of my recipes are quick and easy. There are a few that are harder, but a lot of them are quick and
That's
easy.
That's kind of the goal, is to make it quick and easy, things that you can do without a whole lot of prep time and you know all of that, so you can look like a hero,
even though
you may not be a five-star chef. In any event, at Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN on Facebook, or find the link at goodmornings.net. And my wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will put a wrap on our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. And once again, if you're a regular listener to the podcast and you haven't done so already, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Coming up Monday morning on the program, a little Monday motivation for couples on winning together. 8 keys to building a thriving marriage. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.